Hi folks, this is Chris with a brief update about the Reaper Kickstarter that we mentioned in the news segment of this very episode. When we recorded this episode, there were more than 2 weeks left to contribute to the Kickstarter. As of today, August 21st, there are only a couple days left, so if you like having lots of plastic minis from Reaper, get on over to Kickstarter.com and search for Reaper Bones. Check out the project, look at the rewards they have for contributors. The same thing applies to the Better Angels project, which has something like a day more than the Reaper one, so listen to the show, and if those projects strike your fancy, get on over there and kick in. Enjoy the show.
This is Felicia Day, and you're listening to the Rule Zero Podcast.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Soom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back to Rule Zero. I'm Chris, and I'm just about as evil as an Eskimo boy can be.
And I'm Pete, and you will all bow down before me.
Very frightened. I'm intimidated.
You should be.
Welcome back. It is another fine episode, and we have reached a milestone, Peter.
We have? What is it?
It is episode 10.
Oh my god, it is!
So, would you believe this? I pulled a Pete.
I can't believe it.
Okay. I pulled a Pete and left my phone on.
The irony of this being that I specifically turned off my phone in my answering machine before sitting down.
Okay, we're back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the show.
So what have you been up to? It's our 10th episode.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're right.
Holy cats. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So we have passed the point of pod fade.
I think so.
The expectation was X number of episodes.
Oh, okay. And then no more. Is that what the idea was?
A lot of podcasts get started, do 4 or 5.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember who told me, once you're past 7, it seems that you're reasonably committed.
Okay.
I think in celebration of our 10th episode, we should pick up the pace a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe do 2 episodes a month now?
I would be happy to do so.
Okay. We shall make it so.
Excellent. Yay!
So celebrate number 10 with us and have 2/5.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, I know, right?
I have some milk.
Okay. Yeah. So gaming. We are gamers. We game. You game. I game. We all game. Wouldn't you like to be a gamer too?
We are part of the same tribe.
We are. And I did a whole crap ton of gaming for my birthday this past weekend.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
You are the answer. No one knows the question.
The question is, how old is Chris?
Oh, okay. Well then.
You can read Hitchhikers for the answers.
There you go.
But yeah, I crawled out of bed around 10 o'clock on Saturday.
Oh, you poor.
Someone had brought me coffee and a breakfast sandwich.
You poor monster.
I know my tired life is just so physically demanding.
I know.
So I got up, I slugged around for a couple hours, and we played BattleTech all day.
Oh, good on you!
Yeah, so I lost, but I had fun doing it.
That's cool.
I pulled about a dozen mechs out of the introductory box set, mm-hmm. and just sort of matched them by tonnage, and I split them into 2 teams and paired them down to 4.
Okay.
That or actually 5, and then on the day of the game, we took out the premium mechs because they were clan mechs, and they were the only clan mechs.
Nice.
So we had a Jenner, a Catapult, an Assassin, and a Banshee up against a Cyclops, a Panther, a Jaeger mech, and a Cicada. Or a Cicada, if you say it that way.
I like Cicada, but...
Okay, you say Cicada, I say Cicada.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, we should have, because we got our asses handed to us.
See, that's what happens.
Yeah, Eric was saying, Eric was playing, and he's an old hand with BattleTech,
mm-hmm.
and he was saying that the mechs were not evenly matched. They had a 5-ton advantage on us, but they had way more armor and much longer range weapons. They had fewer weapons. All of their mechs had fewer weapons.
But they could hang back and snipe you while you guys tried to collect and engage in close combat.
I mean, we still ended up taking down 2 of them. And
have you learned nothing from Gundam?
Apparently not.
Yeah, see?
We took down 2 of their mechs. We didn't lose any of our mechs. But by the time it was 5 o'clock in the evening, we were like, there's no way we're going to touch that Banshee.
Ooh. Yeah.
Which was almost completely untouched. I was in the Cyclops, and that's a 90-ton mech, and one lucky shot early on in the fight basically crippled me.
Oh,
and it was like, that's the anchor of the Lance.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't go well after that. But we did okay. We walked off under arms.
All right, well.
So we acquitted ourselves nicely.
Excellent.
And then we went from that into a into our Pathfinder game.
Fun.
So I gamed from noon to about midnight.
Nice.
So yeah,
I would like to do that for my birthday. I would just like to have a single marathon session, maybe play one, two, or even possibly three games during that time. And every time I try to organize it, can't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't tell you about Sunday.
Oh. Was Sunday the day where there was Dominion being played?
There was much Dominion being played.
That was the day that I called and interrupted your game.
Yeah, you were, and it was my turn when you called too.
So oh, well, then it was perfect timing. So you could hold the game indefinitely if you had to.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to miss anything,
right?
Because you know they were waiting for me.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was. We played Dominion from about 2 p.m. to about 10 p.m.
There you go.
We took some breaks, you know, to eat and stuff.
Yeah, bio breaks.
We had a revolving cast of players, and Sharon actually got to play.
Nice.
And we were worried that she wasn't going to be able to play and enjoy because she can't see.
Right.
However, there wasn't a lot that you needed to keep secret before your turn.
True.
In Dominion, and on your turn in Dominion, everything comes out eventually anyway.
Right.
There's no point in holding anything back.
There is that, yes.
So we would just, you know, if somebody did an attack, we would say, okay, show your hand and see if you have a defense card.
Mm-hmm.
But if she, you know, and if she did, we would, you know, help her, you know, give her her options on that.
Right.
But other than that, it was, you know, wait till her turn and, you know, on her turn, put her cards down and, you know, she tells us what she wants to do.
That sounds fantastic. I'm glad that she got to play.
She can't wait to play again.
I'm sure.
Not only did she...
She played well.
She won.
Nice. See, Dominion's like that. It just it draws you in. It's just it really is an incredible card game. You know, I wasn't big on build games prior to that, but once I played Dominion a few times, I've been willing to give other build games a chance.
Well, there were some really annoying cards out on the table in that game. A lot of them were there were two attack cards on the table, and they were. Pull the next cards off your deck and probably trash them maybe just discard them.
Nice.
And so there was a lot of, you know, cards disappearing from the game. There was money disappearing from the game.
I love that. That's part of the Bastard 10 mentality.
And Sharon was playing. She was like, so I just, you know, I need to collect these victory points and that wins the game. And you know, Dave and Dawson were like, yep, that's how you win the game. Now show me your next couple cards. I'm going to buy another one of these attack cards. She's like, okay. On my turn, I'm just going to buy this duchy here.
Nice.
And she bought nearly the whole deck of duchies.
Holy cats.
Before anybody else had gotten any.
Right.
She was like, okay, all I got to do is collect these cards? Okay.
Gladly. Stand back, Blues. Yeah.
So there was, in that particular game, there was a, you know, two of the players were focusing on getting the attacks and controlling the game, and Sharon was concentrating on, like, holding up and building up her points. You know? Yeah.
And look who won.
And yeah. So I was only a couple points behind her in that one.
Right.
So we played all day. We played about five games, five or six games. And I won one of them. And it was a hollow victory because it was the last game of the day, we thought. So
that's okay. It's not a hollow victory. You won the last game of the day. You're still valid, as far as I'm concerned.
Boy champ. That's what I said.
There you go.
So, yeah. So that was those were my games.
Cool.
Great. So, what about you?
L5R.
How's that going?
It's going really, really well. We got to meet up with the Naga.
Uh-huh.
We're going into the Shinnamon Mori, the Shadow Forest, and we're hunting down somebody who is being corrupted by a demon. Actually, it's not even a demon. It's just an evil spirit that the Naga had bound centuries ago that has been released and has been body hopping.
Ah.
I love the body hoppers.
Yeah, so it's got an element of horror to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because the idea behind it is that the really big baddie is kind of the source of all evil. And he's releasing demons and other things into the world. And it's all very tempting to use. There are, you know, there are things, there's evil magic called Maho Tsukai, which you probably know is blood magic.
Okay.
They've got all sorts of different things that will corrupt you and make you secretly not a nice person. But you pay a price for it, and that makes me happy.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So it might make you a little bit evil.
There is always a chance that it will, quote-unquote, taint me.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wow. Got to avoid the taint.
Now, you see, I enjoy the taint, quite frankly.
Well, if you... chacun a son goût.
There you go.
That's French. Nope. Never mind.
Okay.
So, a couple of shout-outs. I got to talk to some people.
Ooh, give it up.
You know, there's been a review on our iTunes page for a long time, and I have been remiss in not acknowledging.
I was completely unaware of that. You know that.
I didn't know that. There's a 4-star review by Disturbed Rock Munchkin. So thanks to you, buddy. Whoever you are in your Disturbed Rock Munchkin ways.
Yes, thank you very much.
Rock on, you Disturbed Munchkin.
Rock on. Shine on you, Disturbed Munchkin.
Yeah. So I mean, we appreciate the feedback and would love to, you know, get more feedback from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of feedback, I got an email from Christine from fanboycomics.net who had some comments on a show that we had done, and also it turned out that we had been in the same room at Origins. Well, I was talking about the Serenity game, and she said she was running a mouse guard game at the next table over.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure.
I would have loved that mouse guard game.
Yeah. So thanks, Christine, for the comments, and
keep
listening.
Thank you very much, Christine.
That's all I had for shout-outs and news and gaming. Not news.
Not news.
We've got a little.
Okay, well, why don't we move on to the news then?
Okay, let's just hop right into the news.
Sounds good.
It is time for the news.
Only one major item of news this week that strikes my fancy. I don't know about you.
Lay it on me, O Wizard, O Wise One.
Well, O Wizard, O Wise One, the Reaper Miniatures Bones and Evolution of Gaming Miniatures is a Kickstarter.
Nice.
On Kickstarter.com. Just search for Reaper Miniatures Bones and you'll find it. As of this recording, there are 16 days to go. And... it's a project, as I'm reading off the page, a project to ramp up the production of the Bones line and get you the game models you want now.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they need capital to start cranking out these figures that are pretty popular.
Very cool.
And there's much more information. I'll read you the chapter, the headings on the page. Why are we doing this?
Okay.
What do I get for supporting you? What are Bones gaming miniatures? All these answers and more are awaiting you on the Kickstarter webpage.
Fantastic.
And the reason why I have to call attention to this is because their rewards for pledges are amazing.
Yay.
I mean, you go to the $50 level. Actually, there is no $50. $60 level, the mummy level. You get one each of the 30 new Bones miniatures.
Wow.
Now, these are plastic casts, but they're really nice. I mean, this is Reaper we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really gorgeous figures here. And if you go to the $100 level, it's just you get all those things and more. There's some character figures, a lot of undead because, well, you know, it's Bones. What do you expect?
Yeah, well, there you go.
A few animals, a few devil-like things. And a succubus on a motorcycle.
Woohoo!
The mascot of the Reaper Minis line named Sophie.
So, like a bat of hell, she'll be gone when the morning comes?
You know, I always heard that as money comes. And, didn't make a lot of sense to me as a kid. But yes, like said bat from said hell.
She'll be gone when the morning comes.
Yes. Although, if you pledge at the $100 level, she will remain on your shelf when the morning comes.
Oh, fantastic.
But, yeah, and when the money comes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It looks like they no longer are giving. Well, no, there it is. Okay, they are. They do also have a different version of the Sophie on the motorcycle, which is nude.
Oh, well, there you go.
And that is for the urban legend. That is for the ghost level. That is the urban legend Kickstarter, Sophie. It's an exclusive mini. You can only get through this Kickstarter.
Wild.
It says exactly like the one above, but she's in her birthday suit. No, she's in a slightly different position. Okay. But, you know, hey, why pick nits?
Indeed. Especially but, the succubus on a motorcycle.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't pick a nit with her.
No, me either.
But yeah, so it's Reaper, it's some great figures, it's some great rewards, and I just, you know, they've already met their goal.
Mm-hmm.
They're like into, their goal was 30,000. They are near 300,000.
Wow. You see, again, this is why I'm very happy about Kickstarter, because there's so many gaming products and ideas that are getting out there and being funded. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm 16 days to go. I'm going to drop a C note on there.
All right, you go, boy.
Get that big pile of figures.
Mm-hmm. You just won Naughty Sophie.
That actually is not with the $100 level.
Oh, that's I thought that was
$100. That's a separate, but oh, no, no. Dude, I'm getting that too.
Because it's there.
Yeah, so did you have any news?
No, actually, I didn't bother to look up too much news because originally this topic... The news was supposed to be the Ennie Awards, and then the Ennie Awards was so long.
Right.
We decided to make it its own.
To make that the whole show. Yeah,
its own show.
All right. So, yeah. So let's. Speaking of Ennie Awards, voting is now closed for the Ennie Awards.
As of the recording of this broadcast.
Yeah. So it's too late if you didn't vote. And you know what? I did vote, and I voted backwards.
Uh oh.
They ask you to. Give a rating of 1 to 5.
Ah.
And I thought I was awarding weighted points.
Oh.
But no, it's your order of preference.
Ah. Whoops.
Now, fortunately, there were only two or three things in each category that I wanted to vote for, so I only voted for the things that I wanted to see represented in the, you know, in the awards.
Fair enough.
There were a couple things that I gave, you know, number 5 to the thing that I wanted to win the most.
Well, you tried.
Yeah.
So much for an educated electorate.
Nice callback. Okay. Okay, we're going to go straight into the heart of the matter where we're going to talk about some evil stuff.
We're going to talk about evil.
You know, this, we might get so evil, we get the explicit tag again.
I love that stuff, and I like the fact you snorted on the end of that.
I think all evil laughs should end in a snort.
It should. And you know, okay. At least that's coming along.
Yeah. So I got that going for me. All right. So we'll be right back with the heart of the matter.
This is the heart of the matter.
And we're back, and we're talking about evil. We're going lots so of dark.
It's going to be a dark darn show.
It is. I can hardly see a thing.
It's so dark. Bloody dark.
It is bloody dark. Bloody and dark. So the idea behind here is that we're going to talk about evil, the possibility of evil campaigns, why you'd want to play evil, why we fight evil.
And I think we'll talk about evil from both sides of the GM screen as well.
Yes, I think so. We'll talk about, maybe we'll even get to talk about why necromancers get such a bad rap.
They do, don't they?
They really do. And we'll bring in things, supplemental things, different games that focus on you being evil, and supplemental books like the Book of Vile Darkness.
Have you read the Book of Vile Darkness?
I have not. I'm actually waiting for the movie. Oh, no, 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 no. Go check out IMDb.
No, come on.
No, seriously.
There's...
It's...
All right. It's I don't
D&D
believe
movie.
You. A D&D movie.
The third D&D movie.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're naming the third D&D movie Book of Vile Darkness.
Yes, they are.
My God, they are.
Yes, they are. Isn't that awful? Talk about evil. Way.
Is this a done deal? Is this?
Yeah, it's a done
deal.
Is this
made?
There's even a trailer.
No, come on.
Oh, God, yes.
All right. You know, they've surpassed the depths of evil that I think we could possibly have discussed in this episode.
It's true, just by that one action.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so who's in it? Nobody, 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 nobody.
Pretty much. Not even getting Snails back.
No, come on, really?
Yeah, no, he doesn't show up for this one.
Oh, okay.
Although I am looking forward to, you know, evil things being CGI'd in and then laughing uproariously at how bad this thing is.
Yeah, maybe they can trick another beholder with a rock.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's only got eyes everywhere.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So let's talk about something besides this movie.
Yeah, let's talk about evil.
Why evil itself.
See.
Evil incarnate.
Why is evil so sexy?
Why do you think evil is so sexy?
I think evil is so sexy is because there's always the allure. I mean, being good is difficult. Being good is a tough thing to be.
Okay.
Being evil is easier. Being evil promises you a better time of things. You know, it's just, you can sit there and say, all right, I can be good and I can just hang out at home with a good book. Mm-hmm. And maybe a loved one and things like that. And that's how I'll spend my Saturday night. Or you could go out and get rip-roaring drunk and go to bed with somebody you've never met before.
Hmm. Is that necessarily evil, though?
It can be.
I suppose it is the opposite of virtue, but...
Especially if you have a loved one already at home.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'll give you that.
But I think a lot of it is just... It's just the sexier way to go. They dress better. Mm-hmm.
They do dress better. They do
better soundtrack, you know.
Yeah, usually.
And I can tell you from experience, and I'm sure you probably have this experience as well, that playing the villain on stage is a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
It just is, and I think that's one of the reasons why, as GMs, we get such a kick out of being mean and nasty to the players, is because it's fun to be evil.
Yeah, and the thing is, I always go eviler. In mm-hmm. my games, like I always, you know, I've got this set up and I'm like, okay, the players are already motivated
mm-hmm.
to do, you know, to stop this bad guy from getting his way.
Yep.
But I got to go that extra, mile of evil.
And having been on the receiving end of that, I can tell you, you are evil.
I go to darkness and I just keep going.
I'm wondering if part of you did it again.
That's my house phone. I got nothing to do with that thing.
I think part of it may be also catharsis.
I think maybe.
We don't get to do the bad things in real life, that we can do the bad things in gaming and kind of get it out of our system so that we can go on and be nice people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's...
I should say good people, because you and I are rarely nice. We're just good people.
Yeah, that's and as Red Riding Hood says in Into the Woods, nice is different than good. Although yes. What she should have said was nice is different from good.
Yes.
But that's another nitpick.
You certainly are nitpicky.
Yeah. That's pedantic, okay. I think, is a better word.
There you go. Why do you think evil is so sexy?
You know, I really don't... very often think it's sexier, but like you said, it's, you know, it's, and Yoda said also, it's easier, it's faster.
Mm-hmm.
And playing a character who could do bad things mm-hmm. but chooses not to has lots of role-playing potential, but sometimes maybe you don't want to choose not to.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and in the campaign that I'm, there's like a mini campaign that one of my regular players is running for us. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to realize that my character, the way I have been playing him, is mm-hmm. not a nice person.
So would you, I mean, is this a game in which alignments are used?
Yeah, and that's another thing I was going to get into.
Okay.
Is when you say playing evil.
Mm-hmm.
Are we presupposing a game that has an alignment system?
Not necessarily, because there are some games that presuppose that you are heroic and therefore on the side of virtue and good.
Uh-huh.
Such as the Marvel
sure.
role-playing game.
Any superhero game, it's going to assume that you're a superhero.
Right, exactly. I mean, but you've got games out there like Fiasco where you're not playing nice people.
Right.
You know? It's just the way it is. Uh-huh. You know, which doesn't preclude you from playing a good person in Fiasco. You could be just the person who just wants to make sure that everybody gets out alive.
Right.
Mind you, that means you're the patsy who's going to die at some point, but still.
Happened to me.
You have the option. Yeah, you have the opportunity to be on the side of the angels, as the mm-hmm. case may be.
Right. How many times have you been like in an evil campaign, like an extended campaign where the characters are evil?
I was in an extended campaign where we all started out as assassins.
Okay.
This was in first edition.
Starting sounds pretty evil.
The idea behind it originally started out with a bunch of us getting together in high school, actually just a little bit after high school. And since we were all going to be together for the summer, we decided we'd have a summer campaign.
Okay.
And we got talking about the stuff that we'd run before, and our initial idea was to run a company of thieves. And then one of them said, you know what, I think that I'd like to play an assassin.
All right.
And we went, okay. And he said, you know, what's the – I said to – it's a guy named Danny. I said to him, what do you want to do with this? And he goes, I want to make basically an assassin who's kind of like Elric. I want him to have a big flaw.
A big what?
A big flaw.
Oh, okay.
That he thinks he wants to be good, but really he's really good at evil, and he's going to stick to that.
Okay.
And so rather than albinism, his big flaw was that he was half dark elf.
Okay. Sort of a proto Drizzt.
Yeah. And this was long before Drizzt was even conceived of. But the idea was that he had obviously half elf and obviously not one of the good elf thing. So he was already, people were already heavily prejudiced against him. And so we started, you know, and from there, that's where the Brotherhood of Assassins was born. The rest of us kind of fell in, and we were like, yeah, no, we'd like to play assassins too. And because in the first edition, you didn't have to take that as a prestige class or a kit or whatever, you just went into becoming an assassin. And it started out as we would all help each other with hits. And then as time went on, we would be given, like, all right, you guys have to take care of so-and-so is having an engagement announcement party.
Okay.
And we need you to take out these players in the city council.
So as a group, you were taking on basically hits.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, and we were doing it with – we would come in with these grandiose plans. You know, we would come in with all these different things. And we would do little snipes on each other all the time.
Oh, okay, that's actually where I was gonna try to steer the question was, you know, were you evil to each other?
Oh yeah, no, we were evil to each other. Okay. The only time that we weren't evil to each other, and this was because I think I was playing a lawful evil character, was that Danny's character and my character had made a blood pact.
Okay.
And so because I was lawful evil, I was honoring the blood pact. And so when the time came and it was just down to me and him, I got the sword through the chest.
Right, because he wasn't lawful.
Because he wasn't lawful.
Yeah. One of the hangups of an alignment system on two axes.
And the funny thing about the lawful evil was the fact that I became the contract guy. I became the guy who sat there and worked out the terms with the people who were hiring us. And of course, we had joined the guild very early on. We did all these different, you know, guildy type things. We ran the gauntlet together. Mm-hmm. To train and all this other stuff. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, we had a great time doing it, but it's just, it didn't last as long as we would have liked before we started to really get into it. And, you know, in the rankings of assassins, you can only go, I think, to 13, and that's the grandfather of assassins. And prior to that is the guildmaster. And so we were trying to,
is that with the first edition titling system?
Yes.
Okay.
The fact is that as you go up in level, they tell you there's only so many of this level.
Oh, yeah. There were a few of those. Druids and monks were like that, too.
Right. There's only one guildmaster. There's only one grandfather of assassins. And if he don't want to be found, you ain't going to find him.
Uh-huh.
And so what had happened was it had come down to the fact that we were in an interesting state because the guildmaster is only supposed to have two lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of put us in a state because there were four of us.
Someone has to go.
So we were like, well, two of us have to go.
Uh-huh.
And so we got into fighting, arguing with each other about who was going to go.
Uh-huh.
And one of the players said, oh, you know what? I won't even contest that. I'll stay at this level.
Uh-huh.
And the other guy's like, no, I think I want to be a lieutenant. So I slit his throat. And so
well, that was pretty damn evil.
Oh, yeah. He didn't get to be a lieutenant. So it was down to Danny and I. And then we'd gone on a big hit. We had taken out part of the royal family of the Old Kingdom because they were trying to reorganize the Old Kingdom into one big empire again. So we took out everybody but the king as kind of a warning.
Uh-huh.
And the king was like, oh, I'm done. No more expansionism. Nope, we're done. This is good. I'm looking for a new queen. And at that point, the DM said, well, you know, you guys have enough XP to be Guildmaster, but only one of you can be Guildmaster, and you have to take out the existing Guildmaster.
Uh-huh.
And so part of the agreement was that Anna and I said, okay, we'll dice for who gets to be Guildmaster. We'll take out the Guildmaster together.
Okay.
And we'll dice to see who gets to be Guildmaster. And we were like, and he was like, okay. And I said, okay. And we went in and we took out the Guildmaster. And I said, that was great. And then he stabbed me through the heart.
Hmm. You think you know people.
You think you do. But it was an interesting.
Honestly, how did you not see that coming?
So that was a lot of fun. And prior to that, I'd run an evil campaign. and we made it through two adventures.
Actually, you're telling me back. That this happened back in first edition reminds me that I was in one other evil campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Back in first edition, I lasted about half a session.
Oh, there you go.
Because I was a magic user, and I think I came in at fifth level. I don't even exactly know how that happened.
Gotcha.
But one of my first actions was to assess who liked who, mm-hmm. and then in my own subtle way cast friends on everybody.
To try
to make them like me, so that they wouldn't.
You muttered the magic incantation, "I'll be there for you."
Yeah,
starts to fall.
Yeah, and yes. And we were, and you know, friendship is magic.
It is magical.
Yeah, so I tried that. Turns out, saving throws make it less magical. So a couple guys liked me. And a couple guys disemboweled me.
Well, there you go. And so couple guys who, like you said, we'll revenge you, and then went out and had a drink.
No, they didn't revenge me. That by the time my liver was in the rafters, I believe that's where that ended up.
Uh-huh.
they didn't like me that much anymore. So that okay. So yes, I have played evil before.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, so paladins have to be good, right?
Oh yeah.
So. Someone who's, because they play lawful good and they have a code.
Yes.
Someone who's evil, do they have a code?
A strict code.
Do they have a code of being evil?
I think it's every man for himself, or is that the central message of Buddhism?
That's a central tenet of Buddhism.
Oh, okay. Then, then they're all Buddhist. No. no, they're, I think every man for himself is pretty much the.
So it's not like, I've been too nice to people, I have to go kick three puppies.
No, I don't think you ever have to do. It's funny because that's one of the things my buddy Matt is a very cerebral guy. He's a great role player when he's into the mood to role play. And one of the things that he did was he presented two faces of neutrality to us very early on.
Okay.
The first face of neutrality that he presented was one wherein he would constantly do things that conflicted with each other.
Okay.
So, you know, he would go off and kick a puppy, but then because he kicked the puppy, he would feed a homeless child.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
You know, or things like that. And it would go back and forth like that. And that was kind of fun because playing with that kind of scattered craziness makes for an interesting campaign.
I think the kind of do an evil thing and balance it off with a good thing, mm-hmm. interpretation of neutrality, mm-hmm. is incorrect. I think it's wrong. It's silly. Somebody who does that kind of thing is just insane.
I personally don't disagree with you. It's just that I thought it was a fun way within which he introduced the concept of neutrality to us. Uh-huh. The other way that he did it was basically sit there and say, morality has no place in what we're doing.
Right.
What we're doing is essentially a bad thing for a good end.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to rationalize it away by saying, this is what your God dictates,
mm-hmm.
but the gods ain't here.
Right.
We are.
Well, I can see that you know, that interpretation of neutrality is if something is bad that we have to do, it's on my conscience, not yours.
And I think it also, I think it is a fun way to bring into light how alignments play in a game.
Mm-hmm. In a game with alignment. Let's face it, we're kind of talking about D&D.
We are, but I mean, there are other games that also embrace alignments, like, for example, Pathfinder.
Well, that's basically 3.5. I mean, I don't really separate the two when I talk about them.
So that's kind of the situation. And I think that's also one of the reasons why when you play in a game that does not possess alignments, the moral ambiguity helps drive you in certain situations, you know, because you find where your line is.
Yeah.
I played a character who was a privateer.
Okay.
In an alignment-less campaign, and he loves his queen. He would do anything for her. And so that was put to the test. And at one point, I got into we were using flintlocks, but I got into a shootout with an NPC, and I wounded him. And what I had done was basically put, you know, a lead ball in his eye. And he was groggy, and he was coming in and out of consciousness and stuff like that. And I basically, and it was raining very heavily, and I grabbed him and I said, you know, who do you work for? I want to know who's trying to assassinate the queen. And he basically said, piss off, Postie. And so I shoved my thumb into his eye socket.
Okay. That's mean.
And he screamed, but he spilled the information that I wanted. As a result, I was able to stop an assassination of the queen.
Okay.
Now, the queen isn't necessarily a nice person,
mm-hmm.
but she keeps the place running. And everybody, you know, the old 51% of the population gets fed.
Right.
The majority of the people are living lives that they want to live as a result of her being there.
Okay.
So, you know.
That was something that wasn't really something that was a violation of an alignment or any even like an alignment consideration at all.
No, but I would consider just something that
your character. I mean it's definitely cruel.
Yeah, so I mean,
and I guess you know my interpretation of the D&D, okay, and also Pathfinder alignment system is that the good evil axis is good. The more good you are, the greater your capacity for self-sacrifice and altruism.
Yes.
And the further away from that you get, the less inclined you are to put yourself in front of somebody else, in front of harm's way for somebody else.
Right.
And then the evil alignment is not necessarily selfishness. I find the evil alignment cruelty.
For the sake of cruelty?
Your capacity for cruelty.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people kind of put, you know, greed on that end of the spectrum. And I don't think greed is necessarily evil because.
Oh, greed, I think that the love of money is the root of evil.
But really, greed is just sort of a all too human failing that pretty much everybody has some of.
Yes, but that's right there is the crux.
I don't think that's necessarily the case with cruelty, and I think cruelty makes a better measurement of evil.
I disagree. I think everybody has within them at least a small capacity for cruelty.
I think
expression of passive aggression or what have you, but it's still there.
Okay, I will concede that the capacity is there, but I think it is less evil to engage your greed than it is to engage your cruelty.
But again, that's situational. If you're engaging your greed to the detriment of many others, it's a horrible thing. If you're indulging your greed and sitting there and saying, you know what, I could buy a big bag of chips for everybody, or I could buy this candy bar for myself.
Uh-huh.
And you decide to buy the candy bar for yourself, you're not really hurting anybody.
Right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
You're still being greedy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're saying, well, this is going to bankrupt the government of Iceland, and I'm just going to make another $3 million on top of the millions I'm already making from this deal, and I'll probably get away scot-free, but look at all the horrible things that the people of Iceland have had to go through in the last 3 years to bounce back, one. And they've even gotten to the point where their parliament said, yeah, we're hiring a guy to hunt down the people who did this to us.
Huh.
So, I mean, it's, you know, that's...
Well, I think that's the, you know, buying the candy bar and not letting other people have, you know, not doing something for other people is a far different thing than actively hurting people. Right. Like the stealing from people. Okay. That's on the evil side. And I don't know if you've read, I can't remember what book it was now. I think it was actually The Kite Runner, where somebody said that all crime is a crime of property.
Okay.
That if you take someone, if you kill someone, you've taken, you know, their life, their life. Everything they own. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just an extension of theft.
Right.
That all crime against other people is an extension of theft. Mm-hmm. So I think I don't really put the capacity to harm others mm-hmm. with your greed in the same category as just being greedy. Because you can be mercenary and and even steal from the party.
Right.
You know, hide treasure from the party. And I don't necessarily think that makes you evil. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you go out of your way to defraud somebody and steal, you know, their, you know, 40,000 crowns from their treasury.
Right.
That, you know, then that is more on the evil side than.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's, but again, there are also situations wherein sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A good example of that is working with my special needs daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she really hasn't mastered a couple of skills, and I want to help her.
Mm-hmm.
But to motivate her, I have to get snappy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to be, I'm not going to say necessarily mean, but I have to be cold to her so that she knows she's not getting any help from dad. And then she'll learn the skill and eventually master it. And it's tough. It's a rough thing to do. But, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind. You know, the good thing, the uncruel thing would be to give her assistance through this.
But is it hard for you to do that?
Helping her in the long run. Oh, yeah.
Is it hard for you to deny that?
Oh, yeah. No, it is. And that's,
then
but that's
I think,
it.
I think that is, the, I think that speaks for your lack of cruelty in the situation.
No. And, but the thing is that the act is still not nice. You mm-hmm. know, it's, again, it's an ends justifies the means kind of thing. It's like buying the candy bar. It's a lesser cruelty. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I measure the capacity
me going into a mosque and shooting people.
Yeah. That's why I measure the capacity for cruelty as evil by sort of saying that you've enjoyed such a thing. Like,
but that's what I'm saying with the capacity for greed too.
Uh-huh.
You know, the capacity for greed also shows kind of a litmus test for evil.
I don't know. Don't
no. So don't, you're saying so as, you're saying that the bankers who ruined Iceland's economy are not evil.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm
the
saying
the person who went in and shot up a mosque.
I'm saying they actually harmed people by their actions, whereas, you know, not buying somebody a candy bar is not even remotely cruel.
Right. But again, what I'm saying is that they harmed people through greed.
Right, but they harmed people through their cruelty too. And I think that's okay. the real measure. I mean, their greed led
I guess
them
that I'm
to
looking
cruelty.
At the I guess I'm looking at the fact that it's got to be the two of them together that really is the litmus test for me.
Yeah, possibly. I mean,
so
look at it this way, right? Their mm-hmm. greed wasn't evil in itself, but the fact that their greed led them to engage in cruelty is what, you know, causes this evil to exist.
Okay. I can see that.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yes.
Or you come up with a point that I have to concede to.
I've had you concede to other points.
Yes.
I don't need to do it in this episode.
Okay. We were actually talking about evil campaigns. Evil
yes.
campaigns in gaming, not in.
Why don't we talk about what about games where you are actually purposefully going down the dark path?
You're talking about the oft-maligned necromancer.
I am talking about an oft-maligned necromancer, but I was also talking about some games, well-known games and some independent games, wherein you choose to be a bad guy going into it.
Okay.
Even without the premise of alignment, you know you are to do something that's bad.
The vampire role-playing game, when that came out, it kind of presumed that you were...
okay with killing people and drinking their blood.
Right. I mean, it presumed that you were okay with playing a predator who, you know, killed people and didn't think much of it.
Yes. that in fact humans for you were part of a herd.
Right. Right. And a lot of the the plots of the game revolved around tricking other people in the group sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was hard to get a cohesive party where everybody was just, you know, super best dead friends.
Yes, very true.
And yet that seemed to be the group I ended up in.
We're all like, super best friends.
Super best dead
BFFs.
Yeah, that's the game. That was first edition Vampire, where I accidentally made my D&D character in a vampire game.
Oh, well, there you go.
I accidentally made the indestructible killing machine. I've talked about it before, but it was like super easy to accidentally do that in first edition.
Oh yeah.
So, and that was probably the only time I really played, for an extended period of time in Vampire.
Gotcha. I was thinking, the thing that of course sprang to mind, and we've of course mentioned this in very several podcasts, was Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Where you don't necessarily go out starting out thinking that you're going to be evil, but as madness claims you and sometimes ambition claims you, you tend to do evil things.
Right. Well, there are some games where you are also, playing somebody who is, you know, the premise of the game is that you are going to be hired by somebody to go out and kill somebody for money or achieve an objective for money, during the course of which people might die, and that's just part of the job. And I'm speaking particularly of Shadowrun, but there's also
there you go.
Eclipse
Fiasco.
Phase. Yeah, I mean, Fiasco might end up like that, but, you know, it might not.
True.
You never know till the setup. But in Shadowrun, I actually played a pacifist and had a hard time staying one.
Wow.
I was a decker, so it was easy for me to stay out of the fist, you know, the physical fight.
Mm-hmm.
But my only weapon was a tranquilizer gun.
Did you ever turn that machine on you, Mr. Decker? Sorry, I couldn't resist. So tranquilizer gun's the only pacifist weapon out there, huh?
In Shadowrun, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very hard to stay a pacifist in Shadowrun because...
Shadowrun didn't have things like stun grenades and stuff?
Well, whether they did or not, it doesn't really matter because the rest of my party was not necessarily a pacifist. It was just my character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in that game, you're kind of presumed to be okay with killing people that get in the way of your objective that you're achieving for money.
Yeah. No, I guess Cyberpunk was kind of like that as well.
Yeah. It's, I mean, all those dystopic future...
Yes.
Yeah. Sci-fi games were like that. Eclipse Phase kind of like that too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know the game is there's a lot of pages of weapons.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so the presumption is that you're going to take up these weapons and fight.
Yes. Well, there you go.
You know, I guess pretty much. I don't know. I can't think of a sci-fi game that's not.
There are a couple that are exploration oriented.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of times those degrade into something's in my way, so I'm gonna have to shoot it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and
there have been sessions I've never partaken in them, but they're partaken of them, but the apparently there are Star Trek games wherein, you know, you don't have to shoot them out. You can outsmart it or win with diplomacy.
Yeah, you're right. There isn't a lot of do this for money and mm-hmm. kill people in the way. So
right.
So that's not really on topic. So,
no, it really isn't. But like I said, it's another way of resolution in sci-fi.
Versus then
they have to go out and kill
that,
people.
That is
all
a much harder to achieve objective is diplomacy.
Yes, yes, it is.
Well,
but
well
it still can be fun.
I'd say diplomacy has failed.
Yep.
All right.
I was also thinking about Sorcerer.
I don't know Sorcerer.
Sorcerer is a game wherein you play a guy who can summon demons. Now, while that doesn't necessarily make you a bad person, there's always a chance that you can play just bad people.
Okay. Well, the demons are probably bad people.
Not necessarily. Sometimes they are, but for the most part, the idea behind a demon is that you summon a demon, it grants you something for being bound to you, but it also exacts a price for doing so.
All right. So kind of like Elric?
Kind of, yeah. Another one that I'm looking kind of forward to that I found on Kickstarter that as of this recording has 17 days left is a thing called Better Angels.
Okay.
Wherein you get to play supervillains.
Oh, nice.
As a counterpoint to the Marvel superhero game and the DC Heroes game and things like that.
Is it in an existing system or is it a whole new system?
I believe it's a whole new system, but if you guys go to Kickstarter.com and type in Better Angels,
I will make it.
It is your first choice.
Okay.
Yep. And then, of course, there's my favorite one of them all, which is Kobolds Ate My Baby 3rd Edition.
Third edition now.
Yes.
Aren't we special?
Yes, it is rather, yes.
Tell me about Kobolds Ate My Baby, because you brought it over 3 times and we haven't gotten to play it.
We've never played it. Kobolds Ate My Baby is a game wherein you play kobolds. Kobolds are interesting creatures in that they're little bundles of chaos.
Right.
Who also happen to be delicious, which is why they're the bottom of the food chain in the dungeon.
Okay.
But the one thing that kobolds love the most is a feast, and the two things they love most at a feast are chicken and babies. Now, chickens are a threat, because even a chicken can take out a kobold.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, babies, not so much of a threat. So the trick is to go out when King Torg, old hail King Torg, says, we're going to have a feast. Go out and get me a baby, or else you get to be on the menu. You go out, you get that baby. So you run out. Usually what happens is the person who's bossing the run will come up with a map of a farm, chances are, and then your job is to infiltrate the farm and steal the baby before anybody finds you. And the big bad thing happens when you steal the baby and the farmer's wife cries out, Cold's got my baby!
Okay.
And then various bad things can happen to you. So it's
this is a role-playing game.
It's a beer and pretzels role-playing game. It's a mini game that you can play within 2 to 3 hours, no problem.
Okay.
So it's a very tongue-in-cheek evil, but you still get to do evil things.
Okay.
Evil and chaotic things. So.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yes.
So when you play your character, this is not actually part of our planned discussion, but I now have to ask. Since you brought up kobolds and it's this kind of evil, that flavor, we've got flavors of evil.
Yes, we do have flavors of evil.
So I'm wondering, when you make up a character for an evil campaign,
yes,
are you thinking of patterning this evil character off some famous movie bad guy or literature bad guy? Or are you just, I'm not you personally, I mean you in the general you,
right.
Sort of imagining all of the ways in which you can create mayhem?
I would say that's dependent on the system and the GM.
Okay.
Because if you've got somebody who's a little bit looser in their GMing style, I think you tend to go more for the latter.
The mayhem.
Right. And I think, and it's your own mayhem as you foresee it.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a melange of different villains, you know, kind of thing. Whereas I think if you've got a system where it's going to be a limited amount of time, the person tends to be a little bit more strict with the rules, things like that, I think you tend to, it's easier to template your bad guy.
Well, I don't know if anybody goes into a campaign, into a new role-playing campaign and says, I'm going to play Darth Vader, or I'm going to play Hans Gruber, or I'm going to play any number of movie bad guys that, you know, well, I mean, you know, throw some out there. I can't.
But again, I mean, I think that I know that there have been games wherein essentially the people, and these are games wherein everybody sits down and says the kind of character you want to play. One of them basically came out and said, I want to play somebody who's like Kaiser Soze.
Okay.
And so, which is great. You know, I mean, that's a great movie villain. It's very templated. You have in your mind as the player what this guy's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the character, you get to discover how bad Kaiser really is, you know, that kind of thing. If he had just come in and said, yeah, I want to toy around with somebody who's evil, maybe organizational, you know, whatever, as the case may be, but who's really good at doing X, Y, and Z or stuff like that, that it's just as valid and can be as much fun.
Okay.
You know, I don't think you have to necessarily template the bad guy to enjoy who the bad guy is. But again, I think it's dependent on what your situation is.
Although it just occurred to me that when Dark Knight came out, everybody wanted to be that Joker.
Yes. Yes, they did.
So, I mean, I saw a lot of that kind of...
They wanted to see you. They wanted to do a lot of tardive dyskinesia?
Who?
Do you remember when the Joker would sit there and lick his lips?
Oh, right.
That snake-like movement and the fact that he would blink from time to time is called tardive dyskinesia.
Oh, okay.
And it's because he is in withdrawal from an antipsychotic he was on.
Okay.
So.
I was just thinking more along the primal force of chaos, but you know, gotcha. they might have meant the licking too.
Okay. You know, it's all part of the character.
Yeah, so playing evil, we talked about Shadowrun, talked about... Have you played an undead campaign? That would be kind of cool. In a setting?
I played a game wherein there was an undead plague ravaging the land.
Uh-huh.
And that was fascinating to me. That was actually kind of like my first... That's one of those campaigns that I consider to be more of a Vile Darkness campaign than necessarily an evil campaign.
Tell me what you mean by that.
I think that in Vile Darkness, evil is winning, or evil is on top.
Okay.
Whereas in an evil campaign, you're personally evil and you're promoting evil. Okay. And in a Vile Darkness campaign, sometimes you do evil because you don't have a whole lot of choice in the matter.
Okay. There's Midnight was a setting for the D20 game where it was basically Lord of the Rings, but the bad guys won.
Yes. Yes. It's what happens when Frodo failed to get to Mount Doom.
Right. So that's what you're saying would be a Vile Darkness campaign.
Yeah. Very similar. I ran a Vile Darkness campaign wherein... horrible things would happen, and it was hard to maintain.
Okay. Is this a term that you heard applied somewhere else, or is this your term for such a campaign?
I did it because after I'd actually read your copy of the book of Vile Darkness.
Oh, okay.
So I read it.
That's what it says in that book for that?
Well, what it says in the book is that if you're going to run a book, a campaign that's a Vile Darkness campaign, evil is winning.
Oh, okay.
Evil's on top. Evil has an advantage somewhere.
All right.
And that's what makes it darker. You know, I mean, the whole thing is like Ravenloft kind of went there,
uh-huh.
But I think it wasn't until Monty Cook actually sat down and said, okay, horrible freaking stuff can happen. And here are just some ideas of what horrible freaking things can happen. And I read through them and I was like, yeah, those are pretty freaking horrible. And then I came up with some horrible ideas of my own. And I said, I'm going to run a campaign. I'm going to pitch it to the group. I'm going to see what they think. And it started out with me pitching it to only like four people. And I ended up with seven players.
Okay.
And it was just...
That's still on the manageable side for me.
It was manageable, but it was still very... It dragged in a couple of places that it didn't need to because I had so many people.
Sure.
But what I ended up doing was I put in the old feng shui clockwork thing, which is the person immediately to my left was the first person I asked what they did.
Okay.
And then I went to the person next to them and the person next to them until it came back around to me.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing. So I got a feel for where everybody was just before anything big happened. So, there was a scene wherein this kid had run into town and said, something's wrong with Dad.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Go ahead. You go ahead and tell that story. I'm going to take my headphones off because I've heard this one.
Okay, so the players...
I'm just kidding, but this is dark.
the players go, oh, something's wrong with Dad. Well, we better go see what's going on. And he's on a farm that's far out of town. I mean, it's one of the farthest homesteads away from the village proper. Uh-huh. So they all get in a wagon and they all ride out there. And the crux of it is that Dad has gone to a very bad place. Uh-huh. And it's because Mom... will not let go of the fact that the baby has died. And she's carrying around a dead baby trying to suckle it. Uh-huh. And it has introduced evil into it. And there is a scene wherein people have gotten into the house. Dad tries to kill them to protect the baby. Mom's still trying to suckle a dead baby. And one of the thieves goes around the back of the house. And the kid is there and says, Mom, why can't I see anymore? And the thief turns to see the eyes boil out of this child.
Uh-huh.
And he's holding a gold coin in his palm, and he falls down dead.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, everybody was very deeply affected by my descriptions.
Yeah,
and that's one of the lighter moments. That isn't even the point where a dead girl who has died a long time ago on this homestead comes up and tugs on the sleeve of the ranger.
Uh-huh.
And says, can you help me?
Yeah, that sounds like it got pretty damn dark.
Oh, it got dark fast. And when I described it to another friend of mine, he said, so everybody went out for therapy after the session.
So I guess but was the campaign itself evil? I mean, it was a dark, dark world and vile darkness world where evil was winning, but was, you know, were the characters really evil?
The characters themselves weren't really evil, but they did have to go to dark places to succeed against situations. And it was kind of cool because it caused a rift in the party. The party would argue amongst themselves, both in character and out of it.
Was there a paladin in the group?
No.
Okay.
But there were some definitely good characters who acted in definitely not good ways.
Well, that's interesting.
And it was just very interesting to see the in-character arguments that sprang up as a result.
Okay.
And it made for a great game.
Was there any player versus player in that campaign?
Like there were a couple times
like die rolls and damage done.
It was more of a reaction / charisma type thing.
Okay.
To discredit a character, so that people wouldn't follow him on his harebrained schemes, which he was famous for. But yeah, I think there was only one time that somebody actually drew on another PC.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty intense, but it was resolved, mm-hmm. and it was kind of cool.
So there was no actual, you know, damage done by one player to another player on purpose.
There was stunning damage, but not lethal damage.
Okay.
Done at one point. At one point, one guy just hauled off and belted another guy.
All right.
And almost knocked him unconscious because it was a ranger versus a magic user. And the magic user just didn't have the hit points to withstand,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting punched by a guy with, you know, 18 plus strength.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. By the way, I did some research while you were talking about your kid with no eyes.
Yes.
And the Better Angels is done in the One Roll Engine game system, which you may recall also powered the Monsters and Other Childish Things game.
Yes, I remember when you
played. And also runs the Wild Talents game.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that's what system it is. It's in an existing system.
Okay.
And it is Arc Dream Publishing, the people who do Wild Talents, who is putting out the Better Angels Kickstarter.
I'm looking forward to it just from the description and the little video I was.
Oh yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
I've got the Wild Talents core rule book.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Haven't gotten to, you know, really mess around with it yet, but I really like what I've read. So.
Okay. So to wrap up.
I actually had one more more anecdote.
I did not mean to step over your anecdote.
No, that's okay.
There's a little on my shoe.
Yeah, you have an anecdote on you.
I do.
Although I've never run a con game, I had an idea for an evil player con game.
Okay.
And that is the premise is that the characters are all evil. All of them are evil, mm-hmm. and they all regain consciousness, being confined by a lich, and the lich is saying, I want you to go do this for me. The reward is this vial. By the way, you've all been poisoned, and this is the only antidote I have.
Mm-hmm. What's that? Antidote? To what? Poison you just drank.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the premise is that the party would have to work together to achieve the goal, but beyond that, only one of them can live.
And it's one of those things wherein the threat or the goal that they're going for is tough enough that they couldn't kill the rest of the party and succeed on their own.
Right.
Okay.
That's the idea. And I never fine-tuned it enough to actually run it or to playtest it, but that was the idea that I had for an evil campaign that would make people work together.
And this isn't a D&D Pathfinder type setting.
That was the idea, but it really wouldn't have to be. I don't even know if it would work in a Pathfinder.
I'm not sure that it would. I think that you'd probably have to go with a different system.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like the premise.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you know, hey, it's out there. If somebody runs it, I'll play in it.
There you go.
So just email me and tell me you're going to run it at the next Origins or Gen Con and save me a seat.
We'll see if we can't be there.
Yeah. So that is pretty much all I know about evil. Just this idea. We've got some more to explore on this. We've talked about your other campaigns.
Yes.
But we haven't talked about potential.
True.
You know, what are some of the pratfalls of an evil campaign? What are some things that are going, you know, what if it's just not fun for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the pratfalls. Another pratfall is that everybody's out to get you.
Right. I mean,
you know, it's not even a game of paranoia either.
Right. I mean, one of the things I like about, you know, sitting down at a role-playing game is to know that, you know, all these other people here at the table are here to have fun, and right. that they're generally on my side. In an evil campaign, I know that I'm going to sit down at a table, and every single person at the table is probably has a knife to my back, and the DM or, you know, game master of the system has a knife to my face.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the kind of – I don't know if I'd really want – I don't know if I'd enjoy that.
I guess if you like the challenge of it is one way to look at it. The other thing is, like I said, the campaign that worked – it just didn't work for the entire summer – was the one wherein we all decided that we were all in it for the same reason. And we were going to, especially at level, get what we wanted faster if we worked together.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does an evil team do? Okay, other than your Assassin's Guild – Your guildy assassins. Mm-hmm. What objectives are there for an evil team to accomplish? I mean, basically, there's, you know, go out and kill somebody for money. That's low hanging fruit.
But you know, you've also got the thing wherein you could be working for a bigger evil.
Uh-huh.
And as you go, your rewards aren't necessarily monetary in nature. It could be power or other things. You know, it's like do this and you can have this duchy.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know, and it's those are other possibilities. I mean, look how games have traditionally dealt with evil, quote unquote, evil societies like the Drow or things like that.
It's hard to be secretly evil in a fantasy campaign.
Yes.
Although
my friend Ed did pull that off.
Really?
I have to say, yes.
It's much harder with a cleric or a paladin in the party. I suppose it's much easier without one of them.
And that's what it came down to was there was no cleric, there was no paladin.
Okay, well there you go.
I'm kind of
envisioning. I don't know if this would be even. I would worry about somebody who did this. I'm actually worried that I thought of it.
Exactly.
somebody who plays a character who acts good and does good things, but every time you go into a town, he has to find somebody and kill them.
Actually, like I said, my buddy Ed pulled that off very nicely. He was in a campaign, and he said to me, we met before the game, and he said, I want to play an assassin who's pretending to be the cleric of a little-known deity.
Okay.
What he did was he took a lot of his money, and he threw it into a potion of healing that was contact effective.
Okay.
So what he would do is he would sprinkle his healing potion on people while he said a prayer to his deity. And he would heal up people, and those were his little minor miracles. And then there would be times when the party would go off and do something, and he'd go, that sounds really dangerous. I'm going to stay here and wait for you guys, and if you need healing up, I'm here for you.
Okay.
And they would go off and do that, and then he and I would, after everybody left for the day, he and I would role play out what he had done in town while everybody else was out doing heroic things.
Okay. And was that, you know, find somebody and torture them to death?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes it was that. Sometimes it was retrieve this and kill them if you have to.
But it was directed. It had a mission. It wasn't
He had a mission because he was still.
I'm kind of envisioning a serial killer more than a contract hitter.
Yeah, because I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure you could potentially do that, but you'd have to talk it out with the DM first, you know?
Right.
Or whomever is running, or whatever system is running.
Well, I'm thinking of evil, and you know, like all these, you know, somebody who most of these serial killers, a lot of the times they get through most of their lives up until the point where they're caught, and their neighbors are going, like, "No, I had no idea."
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm kind of envisioning that in a D&D setting or an RPG setting.
Actually, that train of thought played into a subplot in the Vile Darkness campaign.
Okay.
That's one of those things that I like the villain that you didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Or who comes in smiling, shaking your hand and saying, sit down, have a drink. Have you eaten? You know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Because they're not all out there kicking puppies all the time.
No, they're not. They're not all out there in the long black coats with the big, you know, the big collars and insects, you will all bow down before me kind of thing.
Right. Ha 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 ha.
You know, every time that I say you all about done before me, I do the Darth Vader glove thing.
Really? I didn't see
I did the glove pump. Yeah, I know, nobody can see me do that, but it's just, I don't know why I feel the urge to do it when I say that line.
Yeah, and that's another thing about evil. It makes you lazy.
Yes, it does.
Because Vader is one of the laziest bad guys ever.
Oh my God, yes.
I mean, how lazy do you have to be to use the force to choke somebody who's actually within arm's reach?
Okay, let's look at it this way. He works for a guy who dresses in corduroy and sits in the world's most technological lazy boy.
Yeah.
So basically, he's working for my Uncle Ted, who only sits around and watches, you know, the same channel all the time, ESPN Classic. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
Corduroy bathrobe, probably scratches himself.
Probably. I mean, who knows what his where his hands are under that robe.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, and Vader works for him.
Yeah, and he works for him. But what is his job?
His job is basically to go around and make sure that the beer is cold and that the sandwiches arrive on time.
So basically, Darth Vader is just an efficiency expert.
Kind of, but he's more like the friend who, when you're planning the big party, he's the one who makes sure you've got the 24 packs of Keystone and enough chips to go around.
Okay. So he's catering.
No, like I said, he's kind of like the friend who you have who will sit there and say, okay, I think we need more chips. I'll take care of that.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
You know, because I was, you know, watching the movies or, you know, bits and pieces when they come on. And, you know, I was, you know, kind of, well, he's on the Death Star, but he's not in command of the Death Star. But
it's true.
He's not really telling anybody what to do. Nobody's really answering to him. He's just kind of walking around breathing heavy on everything.
Well, the big thing about it is that you've got the problem with the Grand Moff Tarkin, who had pictures of Vader in his underwear.
Oh.
And that's why everybody deferred to him rather than Vader.
Oh, because, you know, after that, people kind of, you know, they answered to him after that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But he doesn't really, you know, he's not really part of the military structure.
It's true. And the thing was, is he didn't want anybody to laugh at his chunky thighs. So right there.
Well, that's, you know, yeah. You know. So anyway.
So once that evidence is destroyed with the Death Star, he knows he's home free.
Oh, that makes sense.
And,
that's now
and
that's
then
evil.
Suddenly he's the big guy. Yeah.
That is evil. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So that's why he's a memorable bad guy, because
Precisely. He
destroyed the evidence of his chunky thighs.
Exactly. And the man responsible for taking the pictures.
I'm convinced.
And this is why it's important that as a Sith Lord, you don't drink heavily at the Christmas party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you might, you know, have some Polaroids show up later on that you don't remember having been taken.
Precisely.
All right. So speaking of Polaroids,
yes.
You can send us Polaroids at our email address. How's that for a segue?
That's a nice segue to the RuleZeroPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can email me at Chris@RuleZeroPodcast.com.
And Pete@RuleZeroPodcast.com.
Or you can follow us on Twitter. We are Rule Zero Podcast.
You can also friend us, or I'm sorry, rather like us on Facebook.
And you can follow our Tumblr, which is RuleZeroPodcast.tumblr.com, which currently still has nothing on it. But we follow Bellshare, and that's what matters.
I'm thinking that I'm going to start just putting up random ideas. Since I tend to follow other bloggers and whatnot like this, that sometimes they come up with ideas that I'm like, oh, that's a nifty idea, and I figure I can share it with our dozens of fans.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if we put something up on Tumblr, we'll have to link it also on our homepage and just sort of refer it there.
Gladly.
So, because I've got our homepage in my RSS feed.
Oh, well, there you go.
As should you.
Yes, you're right. We all should.
We all should.
I have not. I am a bad person.
Yeah, but, you know, there you go. What can you do? It's all free.
It's true.
It's a labor of love. So write us, talk to us, communicate with us, like us.
Yeah. Let us know what we're doing right and let us know what we're doing wrong.
And tell us what you want to hear. And
exactly.
If you want, or who you want to hear from, and we'll try to get them on the show.
Yeah. And also, you know, make sure if you have any other questions about evil or you'd like to chime in on your ideas about evil.
Or tell us your evil campaigns.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
Your evil anecdotes.
Yes, yes. Okay, now I understand why when Darth Vader breathes in, he goes,
Yep. Puff, puff, pass, Vader.
Exactly.
And game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.